Design. It's time.
From the Spec Network, this is Fragmented, an Android developer podcast where we talk about building good software and becoming better Android developers. I'm Don Felker.
And I'm Kaushik Gopal.
Welcome to the show. On this episode of Fragmented, we talk about item number 15, which is minimize mutability. Now, if you're just joining us or you're kind of just getting started with this series, we talk about all the items in the Effective Java book, or at least that's our goal here on Fragmented. And Effective Java is a book written by Joshua Block. If you don't have it, you need to pause this right now. Or if you're driving, pause it right on your hand, also known as your Palm Pilot, to go buy this book on Amazon or at the bookstore, wherever. It's full of great details about Java and all different types of things that you're going to encounter as a Android and Java developer. Now, he doesn't talk about Android specifically, but Android is Java. So you kind of get what I'm going after here. So today we talk about item 15, which is minimizing mutability, why it's important. We're going to talk about how it kind of helps with synchronization, maybe some threading, ways that you can make your classes immutable, and different ways that we can work with those immutable classes and why it's important. And we really hope you enjoy the show. Let's get right to it. Just got done fixing these errors that were like impossible to find, but next time it's not gonna be difficult. Let me tell you why. Previously, I had a client earlier this year who I wrote an application for, and we got this really weird, obscure issue. I'm digging through a customer sent me a logcat, and you know, that was a whole pain trying to get them to send me a logcat. If you've ever been through that experience, like, it's a whole other world of pain just to, you know, a regular customer, hey, what's a logcat? Like, what's a logcat? What's that? There's a cat that's just sitting on a log, or what is it? But anyway, I got that logcat sent to me, and I'm digging through it, and I finally think I figure out the issue. But long story short, it took me 2 days to figure out the problem. Ends up being some weird state that the server was in, and a weird state that the client app, the Android app, was in, and it was difficult to solve. And what I really needed was end-to-end tracking. And thankfully, I was able to convince the client to implement Rollbar. So we have Rollbar up on the server, and we have, and Rollbar is error tracking, and it helps you catch different errors and stuff. And we have Rollbar down on the Android app, so we can catch the crashes and everything. The great thing about it is we could track these things end-to-end. I can see what the client's doing on the Android app, and I can see them what they're doing, what's going on the server. So it gives me full visibility into what's going on and makes it a lot easier to fix these really error-prone problems. The great thing about it is, if you're interested, it's really easy to set up. Just takes you a few minutes to get going. It works with, you know, for example, in my situation, I had an Android app talking to a Ruby on Rails API, but we needed to track things that were happening on the web server too on the web app. But the great thing about Rollbar is it works with all different types of languages, such as, you know, Ruby on Rails, Python, Node.js, JavaScript frameworks in general, all different kinds of stuff, Android, iOS. Check it out. I also take it, and what I like to do is I'll create a couple channels in Slack for like server errors and Android app errors and iOS errors, and then I'll actually have those errors posted directly in there as they happen. Now, when you first set this up, it's real easy. Just go ahead and make the integration into Slack if you want to. Now, hopefully you don't see a ton of errors floating in there. Now, if you do, that is a humongous red flag. And what you need to go do is really go put out those fires, stop what you're doing, fix all those issues. Because if you're seeing them now, that means the users out there in the field are seeing them. And those one-star reviews are going to come rolling in. I don't know about you, but that's not really my definition of a good time to be coming back through and trying to get people to update their one stars back to 4 or 5 stars after you fix the bugs. They usually don't do it. So anyway, go ahead and prevent that problem now and go ahead and get it going. They integrate with Slack, HipChat, if also with your issue trackers. If you wanted to also fire up new issues, you can do it with GitHub, Bitbucket, Jira, Pivotal Tracker, even in Trello. So it's pretty cool. And this is also not some fly-by-night type of company. Rollbar is used by Heroku, Twilio, Kayak, Instacart, Zendesk, Twitch. So there's some pretty big players here in the area. So anyway, if you're interested, The folks over at Rollbar have been gracious enough to hook up all of the Fragmented listeners. You go to rollbar.com/fragmented, and you're going to get that bootstrap plan for free. So that's a pretty cool thing. So again, that's rollbar.com/fragmented. Just tell them Don Kaushik sent you, and they'll take care of you. Yeah, I think, right? Yeah. No, that way, I'm just kidding. Okay, anyway, take advantage of it and get those errors fixed. Adios. Item 15 is minimize mutability. Now, an immutable class is simply a class whose instances cannot be modified. All the information that's contained in that class is provided when the object is created, and it's fixed for the lifetime of the object. Now, Java does have some built-in classes that provide this functionality out of the box, and they are string, some of the box primitive types, things like big integer and big decimal. Now, usually the reason that folks are asking, like, well, why wouldn't I want to change my objects? That's kind of what we do as programmers. Well, there are many good reasons for this, and here's a few here. Immutable classes are basically really easy to design when you compare it against their mutable counterparts. They're easier to implement, and they are actually less error-prone and are more secure. Furthermore, they provide you with a bunch of benefits around synchronization and threading and so forth, which we'll talk about in a second. Okay, so now you're interested maybe, and you say, hey, this sounds kind of cool, but I've always created my objects with getters and setters. Maybe I would like to learn a little bit about how can I make my current objects immutable. To do that, we need to follow 5 rules. And rule number 1 states, don't provide any methods that modify an object state. Now, these are known as mutators, and a lot of folks know these as setters. So just simply omit those. Number 2 is, ensure that the class can't be extended. Now, this prevents the class from having any accidental or malicious intent applied to any of these subclasses. So usually this is done by making sure that the class is marked as final, but there's also an alternative, which we'll talk about in a moment. Number 3, we want to make sure all that our fields are final. That basically specifies the intent that, look, as soon as this item, this field is set, it's game over. It's all done. Now, number 4, we want to make sure that all fields are private. Now, this prevents any accidental access, direct access to a particular field. Now, it is completely permissible and okay to have public final fields containing those primitive values or references to other immutable objects, but the thing is, it's not recommended because it makes it very difficult to change internal representation of the actual object. And we actually talked about this back in item 13. So if you're interested in that, go check it out in item 13. Now, number 5, ensure the exclusive access to any mutable components. So if for some reason you need to have access to a mutable component that's inside of your immutable object, you may need to make actual defensive copies, which is item 39, inside of your constructors, accessors, and so forth, and maybe even use read object methods, which we talk about in item 76. Both of these we have not covered yet. If you do have the effective Java book, feel free to skip ahead and check out item 39 and item 76, which will help you implement the rule number 5, which to recap is ensure exclusive access to any mutable components. The example that Joshua gives here after we talk about the 5 rules is actually a implementation of a class called Complex. And the Complex class just basically represents a complex number. And a complex number is a number with both real and imaginary parts. Now, I'm not going to get in here and start reading you code. Again, I highly advise if you don't already have a copy of this book, go crack it open and take a look at this example here. But the main thing that he's showing here is that they have taken a class that represents a complex number and marked it as final. All the fields are private, final, and then there's no mutator. So again, no setters on all these objects. The values are provided through the constructor. So as soon as the object is created, that's it. That's its state. It has a couple of additional methods, which are add. You can add 2 complex numbers together. You can subtract, multiply, divide. And the thing with these numbers is you actually pass in another complex number. So this class would take an instance of itself for the add method, and then it would return a new instance of the complex instance. And all it would do is take the existing instance field, which is, hey, what's the real number and the imaginary number, and add these 2 numbers together and then return them. And what this is actually doing is it's a form of a functional approach, because the methods return the result of applying a function to the operand without modifying it. So we're not actually taking the real number and changing its value. I'm not saying, hey, this value equals this plus equals this. We're actually saying, hey, here's the value that's been passed in. Let's create a new instance of the complex value type and return that back. So we always have a new instance. Now, you can contrast this to a more common approach, which is a procedural or imperative approach, which methods apply that procedure to that operand, causing the actual state to change. Like I said, so you do plus equals, plus minus, divide, or whatever. You'd actually be changing the internal state here. You're not changing the internal state. You're actually getting a brand new complex object back. So each time you perform an operand, such as, hey, I want to add this complex number to this complex number using the add method, you get a new instance back. So every instance is unique to itself. Now, again, this functional approach may not be very familiar or maybe feel uncomfortable if you're not familiar with it, but it also enables immutability, which has many advantages. Now, before I spoke about how immutable objects are simple. Now, the reason why they can be simple is because an immutable object can be in exactly one state, and that's the state in which it was created. Now, if you make sure all the constructors establish these class invariants, then you're guaranteed that they will remain true for all periods of time. Now, however, if we juxtapose that with mutable objects, on the other hand, you can have arbitrarily complex state spaces and all kinds of different stuff going on. And if the documentation isn't kept up to date or whatever, or doesn't provide a precise description of the state transition, how an object can get from one state to the next, it can be difficult or nearly impossible and also introduce all kinds of bugs into your application. So it can't be really reliable. And again, I don't know a lot of developers out there who update their documentation all the time, unfortunately. Now, here's the cool thing about immutable objects. Immutable objects are inherently thread safe. They require no synchronization. So they cannot be corrupted by multiple threads accessing them at different times concurrently. Now, this is far the easiest approach to achieving thread safety. Here's kind of a fact. No thread can ever observe any effect of another thread on an immutable object. Therefore, immutable objects can be shared freely. You can take one object and throw it across to another thread. Now, the great thing about this is immutable classes should take advantage of this as much as possible because they can encourage clients to reuse existing instances wherever possible. And what I mean by existing instances is what may find one real easy way to do this is to provide a public static final constant for frequently used values. So let's assume that you have a phone number class, right? It's an immutable class. You pass in a phone number, it sets up the area code, or you pass in the area code and whatever it is in the international code, and it gives you an immutable phone number instance back. You may be working inside of your application and have a particular type of scenario where you have a contact us screen. And you always know that, well, a loss prevention is going to have the same phone number. That phone number never changes. Customer service has the same phone number. That never changes. And then maybe collections has the same phone number. And those three numbers never change. They may be used all over your application for whatever reason. So instead of maybe hard coding that inside of a strings file, you can actually provide that in your phone number class because it's very specific to your domain. And so you'd provide in that phone number class a public static final, use a phone number. It would be customer service, public static final phone number, and then the name of the public static field would be customer service, and that'd be all capitals and so forth because we're using public static final, and it would create a new instance of the phone number passing in the known phone number that we have. And we could do the same thing for loss prevention and collections, and then what users could actually do is just say, hey, well, I need the customer service phone number, and they just say phone number dot customer service, and it would give you the same customer service instance back because it's immutable. Now, it may seem kind of wasteful to keep creating new objects over and over and over. An immutable class can also provide static factories, and that goes back to item one that we talked about previously here on Fragmented. And these static factories can cache frequently requested instances to avoid basically recreating new instances over and over and over. Now, all the box primitive types in the Java classes do this, such as big integer, you can also take a look at, which also does this as well. Now, what this actually does is it causes clients to share instances instead of creating brand new ones. And the effect is, reduced memory footprint and garbage collection costs and so forth. Now, if you opt for static factories in place of public constructors when you're designing your classes, it does give you a little bit of flexibility to add caching later without having to modify the existing clients that use your class, which is, an added benefit. So one of the cool consequences of immutable objects is that they can be shared freely across basically everywhere and never have to make defensive copies of them. And again, that's item 39 that we'll talk about soon. And to be certain, you really don't have to make any copies at all because the copies would be forever equivalent to the original because it's the same type. Therefore, we don't need to provide a clone method or a copy constructor on any immutable class. Now, unfortunately, this was not really understood that well early on in the development of Java, the Java platform. So the string class actually does have a copy constructor, but as Joshua states here, it should rarely, if ever, be used. Another great positive benefit here is immutable objects make great building blocks for other objects, whether they're mutable or immutable or whatever, because it's much easier to maintain the invariance of a complex object if you know that that piece of that object is not going to change underneath it. Now, a special case of this principle is that immutable objects make great map keys and set elements. You don't have to worry about their values changing once they're in the map or set, which would destroy the map or set's invariance. Now, one real disadvantage of immutable classes is that they do require a separate object for each distinct value. Now, if your objects, for some reason, are complex and they do require a lot of time to build for whatever reason, maybe processing, this can be a downfall. Joshua gives an example here of a million bit integer, and you may need the instance where you flip that first bit. And what happens is this flip bit method inside of big integer actually creates a new big integer instance. And since it's all also a million bits long and it only differs from one original bit, it will require some time and proportional space to the size of that big integer. Now, if you juxtapose that against a mutable class like the Java util bit set, you can actually do represent an arbitrarily long sequence of bits, but unlike big integer, bitset is mutable, so you can actually flip that single bit and maybe get that performance benefit, and you're not recreating that entire object. Now, the performance problem that I mentioned here can be magnified if you are performing some type of multi-step operation that generates a new object at every step. So if you're maybe performing some type of loop and you're creating these new objects and it's time and processing intensive, so this can kind of become a performance problems. Now, we really kind of can dive really deep into the weeds here of how to solve these performance problems. And if you're interested inside of the effective Java item here, Joshua talks about how the big integer class has a package private mutable, what's known as a companion class, to help speed up these multi-step operations. And it's pretty interesting here. Now, for all the reasons that's, you know, it outlined earlier, it could be dangerous to have these mutable companion classes inside of it. But if you're interested to see how it's done, take a look at the implementation of big integer, and the folks who implemented that have already done the hard work for you to see how that's done for when they're doing, you know, some type of bit manipulation inside of there. And they have that companion class. So if you're interested in seeing some of that stuff of where a performance problem was solved, it's right there already in Java. So check out the big integer class. All right, now that you know how to make an immutable class and you understand some of the pros and cons of that immutability, let's discuss some of those design alternatives. Now, remember before I stated that to guarantee that a class is immutable, we need to make sure that it cannot be subclassed. And usually this is done by marking a class as final, but there is another more maybe flexible way to do it. Now, the alternative is making an immutable class to final is to mark all of its constructors private or package private, and to add public static factories in place of public constructors. If you want to learn about public static factories, please go back and listen to the effective Java item number 1, which we cover here on Fragmented. So instead of marking our class as final, we would maybe just do public class customer, and then we would have a private customer constructor, which would then take in the required values we'd need. But we would have a static factory. So we'd have a public static customer, and we would have, you know, like a create method or something, or a build method, and we would take those values in, and it would return a new instance of the customer class. Now, traditionally, early on, this approach has not been commonly used. However, I have seen it used a lot recently in Android, and it seems to be gaining popularity. However, when this book was written, it was known as not commonly used. But as Joshua states, it was often the best alternative because it's the most flexible, because it allows you to use multiple package private implementations of the classes. So, but to the clients that reside outside of the package, to the people that are, or folks that are using your immutable object, to them, it's an immutable class because it's effectively final, because it's impossible to extend a class that comes from another package, then it lacks a public or protected constructor. But internally to the package, we can actually work with it a little bit differently. And because it's inside of our own package, we should know what we're doing, and it provides us a little bit more flexibility because we can have multiple implementation class, and it allows us to tune the performance of the class in subsequent releases, which we have talked about in previous fragments here. Now, static factories also have other advantages over constructors. You know, you can actually provide different names for them. If you would like to create a particular customer, like an empty customer, you may create a public static customer, create empty customer class, and it has takes in different parameters, or it provides default values for you. And so you can just add that second static factory with a name that clearly identifies its function. Furthermore, earlier on, in the list of rules for the immutable classes at the beginning of this item, I said that no methods may modify the object and that all of its fields must be final. Now, in fact, these rules maybe are a bit stronger than necessary and can be relaxed a little bit to improve some performance. Now, in truth, no method can actually produce an externally visible change in the object state. So a method shouldn't change the underlying value that's being returned. Now, however, some immutable classes have maybe one or more non-final fields, which they can cache the results of maybe an expensive computation for the first time they're needed. And so if the same value is needed again and the same method is called, the cache value will be returned. And then, of course, the saving will be the cost of the recalculation and processing. Now, this trick works precisely because the object is immutable, which guarantees that the particular or whatever computation would return the same result if it were repeated over and over. Now, if, for example, if we had a customer object again and it has a hash code method, which again, we talked about in item 9 about implementing hash code here on Fragmented, and we compute the hash code, we would do that the first time the hash code is invoked. And then what we could do is we could cache it in case it's invoked again. Now, this technique is an example of what's known as lazy initialization. Again, this is another item covered here in the Effective Java book in item 71, and this is something that's also used by the string class, so you can go check out the string implementation. Now, to summarize, what you should really be doing is resist the urge to write a set method for every get method. I know that's what we were probably taught in college. We're probably taught in a lot of online forums. You create a class, you can, you know, encapsulate all the fields, create getters and setters. At the end of the day, Effective Java item number 15 states that classes should be immutable unless there's a very good reason to make them mutable. Immutable classes, they provide a bunch of different advantages that we've talked about, and their only real disadvantage is the potential for maybe performance problems under very specific certain circumstances, such as like that huge bit processing thing that we talked about a little while ago. Furthermore, it's advised you always should always make small value objects, such as, you know, a phone number class or something like that. Now, there are instances where some classes for which immutability is impractical. If a class cannot be made immutable, then what you should try to do is limit its mutability as much as possible, because when you reduce the number of states in which your object can be in, well, it's easier to reason about the object and reduces pretty much the likelihood of a lot of errors that could happen. Because, you know, if state is changing and you don't know about that state changing, well, then your object is kind of unpredictable and it's hard to know what state that it's in. So therefore, make every field final unless there is a compelling reason to make it non-final. This also kind of goes back to the other conversation that folks have had about final classes and final fields and so forth. A lot of developers get frustrated with platform vendors and API developers when everything is marked final, but this is done for a reason, done to make these things immutable, to make them more consistent, more reliable. And that's one of those reasons. So please take that into mind. And if you do need to make them mutable, ask yourself, why am I making this mutable? Is there a good reason for it? Well, this seems kind of complex to create these immutable objects, and you may not be sure that you're doing it right. Thankfully, there's a lot of smart folks out there that have kind of automated this process for you. I highly advise you look at a tool called AutoValue, and the Android GDE, Ryan Harder, has a bunch of great blog posts on his website at ryanharder.com, and he has also created a course on this at caster.io, which talks about AutoValue. You can easily create these immutable value types very quickly with some annotations. Feel free to check out his blog at ryanharder.com or the course on caster.io. Now, I hope that helps. Until next time. Have you ever encountered that technology that you finally learn and you think, wow, I should have learned this a long time ago. I can never live without it again. It's that way with like Dagger and dependency injection. It's that way with like RX Java. It's that way with some functional programming concepts. There's a lot of stuff out there, and Rollbar is one of those technologies that I put into that same category. Anytime I fire up a new app, web app or mobile app, doesn't matter, I install Rollbar immediately. It's just one of those things that I wish I had done earlier. So do yourself a solid. Go to rollbar.com/fragmented. Check it out, install it, play around with it for a little bit. I guarantee you're not going to be sad that you did. So go there now. But if you're driving, don't go now, because I don't want you to crash. And Kaushik and I really like you. But I mean, if you're doing dishes, then I mean, like, take a note, and like, notes are fine, and like, put it in your pocket. So like, when you go to bed and you take it out of your pocket, you're like, oh yeah, I gotta go to rollbar.com/fragmented, and then yeah, that'll work. Yeah, check it out.
That's it for the show, folks. Fragmented is hosted by Don Felker and me, Kaushik Gopal. We edit and produce all the episodes here on Fragmented. Sarah the Amazing Jackson from the Spec Network helps with production assistance and wraps our final mix. Our theme and ad music is by the national recording artist Blueprint from Weightless Recordings. You can find more Fragmented episodes at fragmentedpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you in the next episode.